Hey everybody, welcome to Command Cinema Episode 2. My name is Drew, and other people on here.
I'm Malachi.
And I'm Cody.
We're going to talk about Do the Right Thing by Spike Lee, eventually. But, so we'll just get into it. How's everybody doing?
Great.
I'm fine and dandy.
Cool, okay.
How about yourself, Drew?
I'm doing okay. I'm chilling with my cat and drinking a PBR. And I really enjoyed the movie this week.
Same.
Among other things.
Did you watch anything else other than Do the Right Thing?
I rewatched Marriage Story, and it still made me sad. And I think Adam Driver should get Best Actor, but I know that Joaquin Phoenix is going to get which I don't think he deserves. Oh, I rewatched Joker. That movie does not really hold up very well.
Is that your first time viewing it out of theater?
Yeah, because like I saw all of the criticisms about how bad the writing was and like how edgy it was. I was like, I don't remember it being that bad. And then he was like, all I have are negative thoughts. I was like, oh, this is
cringe lord cinema.
Like it's pretty, and like I think the score is very like theatrical and movie. Yeah, the dancing scene. Malachi's dancing. We're also on video, but y'all don't get to see that. You gotta subscribe to the Patreon if you want to see the video.
There's no Patreon.
There
may be.
Down the road, maybe. Yeah, Joker didn't hold up as much. Marriage Story, still excellent. I watched Parasite, which is fantastic, and I'm not gonna get into it.
Please don't, because I haven't seen it yet.
I'm not gonna say what it's about or anything. Y'all can look it up if you want to. It's fantastic, though.
This week, I watched only The Lobster. Which was it Colin Farrell? For whatever reason, that whole movie, I kept thinking it was Spike Jonze for some reason, and I couldn't get that idea out of my head until the credits finally rolled. But I really enjoyed it. It was a movie that I didn't understand, but upon getting to the end of it, I was like, well, it was okay. It was something to watch. I didn't hate it or anything, but that was pretty much the only other thing that I watched other than Do the Right Thing. What about you, Cody?
Absolutely nothing. I've been traveling all week. What did I watch on a plane? Oh, no, I finished up doing the right thing. That's what it was. Sorry. I did.
On the plane?
Okay. Yeah, I watched it on my iPad. Someone just called the cinema police. I know. But I watched it at home first and throughout the first 40 minutes. And then I watched the rest of it on my iPad. A really cool event that I did get to do yesterday. I got to experience a very slight point of view of Sundance, which was amazing. I was here on business in Utah and just happened to have a chance to have a day off and experience just, like I said, a very small scale of what the whole thing is. And may I add, we have to go, all three of us, because it's just to be around the same thing people love, or around people that love the same thing, I should say. I regret not planning my trip, but for sure, we three need to make the trip for 2021.
Yeah, I'm down. Have y'all heard about any of the movies that have been screened there this year? Like any of the really big ones?
Wait, when's Tribeca?
No idea.
No idea.
It's the only
I don't keep up with film festivals. Like I know like when they happen, like when they're happening, but I don't know them ahead of time.
Cannes is usually in the summertime, if I'm not right. Or I could be wrong.
If I'm not right. If I'm not right.
If I'm not right, then I'm wrong.
I think Cannes in the summer. But, I watched a bunch of stuff, and Cody went to Sundance, and Malachi saw The Lobster. We watched The Lighthouse last time, and we were all kind of mixed on it. And Cody picked Do the Right Thing. And it landed on that, and we all saw Do the Right Thing, which came out in
1989. It's the same age as my brother.
What do y'all think of Spike Lee?
This is the only other Spike Lee movie I've ever seen other than, what was it? Is it Black Klansman?
Yeah.
I saw that, and to be honest, I really feel like this movie is a better portrayal of like his movie making ability, because I feel like it kind of goes along with that whole like less is more. Like obviously you can tell, I feel like he was able to tell a way better story coming up with something from his own head. Because, I mean, obviously, when something is derived from a true story, you can only go so far with it without it being fiction. Mm-hmm. So I really feel like Do the Right Thing is a good testament to his movie-making ability and acting ability, honestly.
Yeah, he's great. He's great in this. Yeah, my only exposure to Spike Lee, I've known about him, and like I said, I've seen Black Klansman. I've seen it twice, and both times it really didn't resonate with me, which is weird because it seems like something I would be into. Just for one reason or another, it just didn't click with me. Yeah, he's a filmmaker that I've always meant to check out, meant to look into his filmography, but a lot of it's not on streaming, so I just never got around to it. But ever since it got announced as like a reissue for the Criterion Collection, I've been really interested in seeing it. And I watched it in standard definition, which was not the move.
You should have paid an extra dollar.
It was the same amount, I'm pretty sure.
No, because I got it on like the PlayStation Store, and it was $3.99for HD and $2.99 for SD. I was like, it'll be fine. I'll just watch it in standard. It was like 480p, and I wanted to just it was awful, dude. Like, I had to like look up clips from the movie that I really liked on YouTube to get like the actual high definition.
I actually purchased it digitally on Apple. It was like a dollar more to purchase it versus renting it, so I went ahead and bought it. And I don't regret the decision at all. One bit.
Sure. How much was it to buy?
I think it was like cheap. It was like $4.99, if I'm not mistaken.
To buy?
Yeah, on iTunes.
Oh my god, I wish I would have bought this.
You still can.
Yeah, I still can, but like, we're going to do another movie in 2 weeks.
So. And you can watch it in lovely HD.
I do want to get the Criterion Collection version, because the artwork is beautiful, and I really want to know, like, I want to see it the way that it's supposed to be seen, because 480p on my tiny TV in my room was not the move, but... The clips I like, you know, I watched again. I got it. Like, it's fine. I'm just a little pissed off. I didn't pay the extra dollar as being cheap. But anyway, we'll just, I guess we'll go ahead and get into it. One of y'all want to start and say what it's all about?
Yeah. So,
for sure.
Looking at a caption, or pretty much like a brief description of what the movie's about. It said, it's the hottest day of the year on the block in Bedford-Stuyvesant area of Brooklyn. A scorching 24-hour period that will change the lives of its residents forever, and I can't agree more. The whole movie is pretty much filmed like in the time frame of a day. And there's like a brief moment, like in the very last couple of scenes, where it's like the next day. But pretty much the entire movie is filmed in the time frame of one day.
Like a day and a half.
Yeah, pretty much.
It starts off like when Sam Jackson's like introducing his radio show. Like,
I love that he's referred to as Sam Jackson in the movie.
What's his name?
Samuel L. Jackson?
No, he has a name. Hold on.
DJ.
What was it? No, it was Mr. Senior Love Daddy, wasn't it?
Yes. Mr. Senior Love Daddy. He's great. He doesn't have like a huge role, but he's fantastic.
But couldn't have picked a better voice.
Yes. Absolutely.
Last on your dial, but first in your heart.
Love it. But yeah, it all takes place over the course of a day. It kind of revolves around Mookie, who is played by Spike Lee. And also, this is his first movie, which is insane to me. And Mookie works for Sal at the pizzeria, who's played by Danny Aiello, rest in peace. And it's kind of like, I read something online that described the film as like a series of vignettes that just kind of like escalates. It's like during a heat wave and tensions are high. And
the first scene of the movie is the mayor literally opening his eyes and saying, "Ooh, it's hot."
The best character in the movie, man. I love the mayor. He's awesome.
So, a little history on the film. I was watching, of course, I know nothing about it. One thing after watching this movie, I wanted to know more. One thing I'll get into later is like how relevant this still is as far as like the whole ending, but we'll get to that part. But just the differences between races and, you know, having the integration with the big melting pot, you know, basically how our country, you know, it was so crazy to see how things are still relevant to this day in a movie that was made in over 20 years ago, or now 20 years ago.
I think it's 30.
30 years ago. Oh, yeah. I cannot do math. 30 years ago.
Old. Yeah, it's got a lot of themes, tense. There's a lot of themes of course, like race and opposites, gentrification. A lot. Okay, like
the scuffing your Jordans.
Scuffing your Jordans. The Utah man has returned.
Shitty hotel Wi-Fi.
Man, like a recorder.
Yeah, you can keep that in if you want. That's how I feel about the Hilton or whatever. I'm Hampton, where I'm staying.
The Brockhampton?
Yeah.
Brockhilton. Oh, yeah. Cody, do you have any experience with Spike Lee?
None so ever. As far as directors go, when I find a director I like, I tend to latch on their work and go through their filmography. And Spike was never the one by any choice of it, just never happened. I think mainly because, like Drew mentioned earlier, it's like to access it, to pay for it. And I was a broke college student. And it's hard to say that, but now that I have stepped in the universe of Spike Lee, I want more. I want to consume more. Like, whatever you say about Spike Lee, it's his movie. I get, yeah. You know, especially I can only say that for this movie, and I can only imagine it's like that with every movie, because the way I've seen him in interviews and the way I've received him from throughout my entire life. I don't know. I hope to see more like this throughout his work. I'm really excited to see Malcolm X, even after seeing this movie and all the history. I mean, very subtle history has, you know, with that one character who's always trying to sell those pictures of like Smiley. The king, and then
Smiley.
Yeah. I don't know. I want to know more about Malcolm X for some reason. So I can't wait to see all of his filmography. I'm ready to dive in the world of Spike Lee.
I think Malcolm X is on Netflix.
Is it really?
I watched a little bit of it like a couple months ago. It's like 3.5 hours.
You love a long movie.
I do love a long movie, but I think I don't know what mood I was in that night where I just like wasn't feeling it, but
probably
it's pretty.
DVRs.
Her Malachi. I was talking to Cody about this, you being like facetious and like mean the other day after I watched Stalker. You're like, this man loves getting faded watching movies.
Because the last few reviews you've left, you've been like, I don't think I was in the right mood to watch this movie. I was a little bit inebriated. And I'm like, for The Lighthouse and this?
Yeah.
And you're drinking a PBR right now?
Yeah. It helps me loosen up a little bit. I love it. Yeah, I guess we got past the history and our experience with Spike Lee. So, would y'all rather jump into the sound or the cinematography?
I'm definitely interested in the cinematography. Does anybody else think that the movie, its temperature was just turned all the way up? Like,
Yes. Because Ernest Dickerson, the cinematographer, put a heat bar under. Yeah, he put it like under the It was the scene with the three guys sitting outside in front of like the red wall,
mm-hmm.
and he put a heat bar underneath it that caused like the waves. I think he did it in a couple other scenes in the movie, but yeah, it feels like hot. And
I definitely remember, gross.
And it's because of the close-ups.
You're right.
Yeah. There's a lot of close-ups
and their face. You know,
it's a sweaty movie.
I think the 45 camera angles, which is mentioned a lot about this movie. It especially intensifies every scene that's used. I don't know. It's like something about that when it's cocked like that. It creates tension for some reason because it makes you feel like you're, I don't know, viewing them. And it makes you already uncomfortable while watching it, or at least for me. And to see them usually intense situations, it just, you know, it amplifies that even more so, I think.
I liked the bits with Radio Raheem. It was like his point of view, and it was like looking down at people.
They always had him so tall,
like 7 foot tall, as
looking up at the I loved his bits. It was great.
My personal favorite of him was that anytime they showed his face would take up the entire frame every time.
Yes.
Like it was ear to ear.
Big oval head.
I need 20 batteries. English.
It's very like vibrant too, like it's hot but also it's very colorful and mm-hmm. pretty, and
right,
any scene with like that big red wall, I loved that. I don't know why, but it was, like, gorgeous. Like, the three guys just sitting outside, like, talking shit in front of the red wall. It was, like, some of my favorite parts of the movie.
They reminded me of the two people at the beginning of the Chappelle Show.
Oh, like the two old men? Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Like, at any given moment, I just expected them to start singing.
For sure. So, I read where this costume director actually used all warm colors when it came to costume design because, you know, just to amplify the idea of being a hot day, you know, not wearing any blues or greens or anything like that. It was all reds and oranges. You know, there were some different colors because it was early, late 80s, you know, the brink of the 90s. So they had all these neon colors, especially with Mookie's outfits. I love his attire. I don't know if Spike Lee came up with all that, you know, just like the, and I know that was a style back then, but just his costumes alone were amazing.
I was so relieved to see Martin Lawrence in, like, one of the very first few scenes. Of, like,
right.
Punchy.
Just goofy.
Because they were all wearing, like, light colors. I was like, God. I was like, it's so nice to take a break from all the red. Like, they, like, it shows them. And he's wearing, like, a blue and yellow shirt. And then immediately after, it shows a green tree. I was like, ooh, I can breathe. It's not so hot. Not so humid there.
Yeah. It gives you a little break.
For sure.
Did y'all notice Gus from Breaking Bad was in this movie?
I never watched Breaking Bad, but upon
neither have I.
After like,
oh my god!
After watching the movie, I was just like really interested in that guy's character bugging out. What was it? Bugging out.
Bugging out. Yeah.
I was just really intrigued by him. I was like, man, that guy's got cool hair. And then the whole movie, everybody was like ragging on him about it.
I was like, his hair.
You need to boycott that barber that you went to from the
I laughed so like,
geez.
Hard when he said that.
Okay, so the score of the movie, I don't have a ton to say about it. It's very like, it's relatively upbeat and jazzy. It kind of goes along with the movie's like carefree attitude for the first little while. It's pretty breezy and it's pleasant to listen to. You know, nothing to like really write home about. But it turns out, and I didn't know this before watching the movie, Spike Lee's dad like composed the score for this movie.
Really?
Yeah, Bill Lee.
If you do watch this movie, I hope you really love Public Enemies Fight the Power, because you will hear
Fight the Power. Fight,
like
fight,
every
fight the power.
15 or 20 minutes, whenever Radio Raheem's character appears in any scene, he has his
like play something different. It's like, no, they're my favorite.
And it, like, I mean, even like the beginning of the movie with Tina's like 5-minute dance scene. That's like that's also Fight the Power. So it's all over this movie. I think that's the only licensed song that they use too.
It's the only one that I recognized upon hearing.
Yeah, just because you hear it like a million times. Like it's a good song.
But jazz.
Jesus Christ. I feel like it's supposed to get on your nerves though. As the movie goes on, you get pissed off too because tensions are just so high and the movie is so hot and like everybody's on edge. It just starts to progress like more and more and more, and they keep playing that Public Enemy song.
Right. And you but start. I think to... that was meant to. I think that was meant. To
oh, it's totally because, meant to. Yeah.
Because you know, it makes you feel the same way when he goes to Sal's pizzeria and he's like, "Okay, you need to act for real." I kind of see where he's going. Like, you can turn it down. I've heard like 15 times in this one movie, and I think that's why. Yeah. I think that's why it's enforced.
And then it's
from
like
the right from the jump.
What did y'all think of the dialogue in this movie? I thought it was like perfectly written. I thought this movie was like excellently written.
Anytime I heard like anybody talking, I was like, man, I was like, I feel like I've heard some of that like a little bit recently. Like it always seems like there's like a different term or a different phrase that like always ends up making its way back around into like current times. And I was like, wow, I was like, people really still say stuff like that. And I just loved it. And it just made it made the movie feel like it was almost, like, made for today. And I feel like that's a really good testament to, like, what kind of movie-making ability Spike Lee has and writing and everything. Because, I mean, to direct, act, and to write it, I can only imagine what you must go through in order to, like, be able to craft a movie like this.
And for his debut, like, it's insane how forward-thinking this movie is. And Bed-Stuy just feels so, like, small and, like, compact.
Yeah,
flows so well with like the rest of the movie, but then it starts to feel like we talked about with the lighthouse. It starts to kind of grate on you a little bit.
because you start to see the same people in like a few scenes, and like you see how they like interact with each other. Because there's like that one
in the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. If it was like, become a part of the neighborhood, getting annoyed with Radio Raheem's radio or Punchy and C, opening the water hydrant. Like
instead
everything
of one
starts,
perspective.
Exactly. And it kind of makes you feel like you're a part of like all of these friend groups. Yeah, and there's
sure.
that,
like
there's
you're
the one
out with all of them.
Exactly. There's that one scene in particular where it shows like all of the different races saying a bunch of different slurs.
For sure. That was my favorite part. It's like, who wrote that dialogue?
It's so funny.
Like they're like the most degrading verbal slander words you could say to that particular race, and then like, you know, the close up with each one of them, I was like, not that I liked the words that were said, but just like the words that were written, you know, I was like, God, it's like if you were in a schoolyard and someone said that, like, oh shit, like, you know, that's what I feel like would happen, like with any of those who said that. That was one of my favorite scenes.
Who are y'all's favorite characters? I'm calling dibs on the mayor. Mayor's mine.
Man,
mayor's the best.
Typical.
Mayor's the best, man. He's like a constant throughout the whole movie.
You're right.
He's so
That's what
funny.
Makes it so... I really like Bugging Out. He really had me. That one scene with him and when he gets his shoes scuffed by the guy wearing the Larry Bird jersey had me screaming. Man, whenever like everybody in the movie pretty much ran up behind him and they were all yelling at this one lone white guy who was just trying to like go back into his apartment or whatever, like everybody was yelling at him and he's just like I'll have you guys know I was born here in Bed-Stuy, and like everybody just throws their head back in disgust. I should beat you up on principle just for saying that. God, it's such I would say that Bugging Out's probably one of my favorite characters for sure.
Yeah, I liked Bugging Out a lot. He's kind of a shithead, but I do like him. Cody, who you got?
That's a tough question.
We're here to ask the tough questions.
Command Cinema, we ask the tough questions. Who's your favorite character to Do the Right Thing? Hector, Mookie's son.
I love that one scene whenever they like, whenever Mookie wakes up and him and Tina, and you can see like the disgust in Hector's face of waking up. Like he's got like his eyes half closed and he's like reaching his arms up above his head yawning. It's such a perfect scene. It's like everybody is tired of everybody's bullshit, and that's what makes it so good.
For sure.
Love it. Love it.
I hate to be typical. And this is my answer. I think Mookie is my favorite character only because he's in between, right? He's between the pizzeria and Sal and then everyone in his neighborhood, right? So, and especially with the characters y'all mentioned, like he's having to, like, okay, this is his job, his appointment, but he hates the way they treat him, but at the same time, he kind of understands that they're kind of understanding in a way, but he's, you know, he's on the border. And I think until the ending, of course, which we'll talk about later, and he has to make that final decision for himself. But that's why he's my favorite character, because he is kind of in between both of these worlds, between the white man and the black man. The one who's employing him, and then the one where he grew up, you know, the one that feeds his family, you know, his friends.
And, I mean, he's the protagonist, so it's...
For sure, for
sure. And plus, like I didn't think he would be a good actor. Like, I know he's a pretty acclaimed director, but, like, he gives a really good performance in this.
For
sure. He's great as Mookie. Like, I really like it. Didn't have anything bad to say.
And it feels like sometimes as directors... I'll take Quentin Tarantino for example.
Okay.
Like even Red Dogs or even in Django, his acting feels forced. With Spike Lee, it's not once that I had to convince myself that he was a good actor. It's like, okay, he's an actor, and then oh, he's a director too. Kind of it didn't feel like he was. Hey, this is my movie. I'm going to put myself in. It was like, okay, I think I was genuinely made for this role.
Yeah, yeah. So it felt natural, like him as movie. Like after watching the movie, I can't think of anybody else that could really like play Mookie like Spike Lee. Like he seemed very like cool and relatable, and I really liked Mookie a lot. But
for sure.
Let's see. Do y'all have anything to say about like the editing of the movie?
I mean the only thing I can think of that I was like really impressed by, like there's like a few scenes where I just really thought that they were really well put together. Like there's the one scene whenever who is it that went outside? It was Bugging Out and Mookie whenever they go outside of the pizzeria right after the whole "you gotta put some brothers on the wall" scene, and you see the camera like follow behind them. They open the screen door and then they close the screen door, and then like the camera stops right at the screen door and you can see it peering out. And I just thought that was like such a great scene, like the way it was put together. And then I thought it was like really interesting the way they had like heat waves appearing on a lot of the different scenes. With there's a huge red wall that has three black people in front of it that are all talking and shooting shit, and they're talking, and there's a heat like wave. There's like the heat waves that you see in the summertime on the camera, and I just felt like it was like a really good, well put together scene.
And that's Spike Lee's like trademark cinematographer. Like Ernest Dickerson and Spike Lee have worked together on so many of his movies, and like I'm super excited now to get more into Spike's filmography, just to see more of like Ernest Dickerson's work. Like I don't have a ton to say about the actual editing, but the colors are gorgeous. It's just beautifully shot. Nothing but good things to say about the cinematography. So cultural and critical reception, I don't think we can talk about this unless we start to get into spoilers about like what eventually happens at, you know, the climax of the movie.
For sure.
So here's our little spoiler warning, you know, get out if need be. Apparently, this movie is pretty controversial. Okay, at least it was controversial. I got on Wikipedia the other night and read a bunch of stuff about it. I think it was like number 22 of the most controversial films like of all time. It may have been then. Like, I don't think it's that controversial now. I think it's pretty tame for the most part. Like, it has a lot to say, but I don't think it's like...
It doesn't say it very heavy-handedly. Like let's say like American History X, which is, I'm sure, is also like a probably pretty controversial film. But I don't really feel like that Do the Right Thing tells it in like a very heavy-handed manner. Like, I feel like it tells it in a way that could be seen by like just any normal person looking from the outside in. Like, I feel like it's very apparent that the same things that appear in the movie could be seen today. And I feel like I feel like at the end of the movie, like, everybody kind of turns a blind eye to, or not a blind eye, everybody kind of just goes back to what they were doing. Cause yeah. I mean, assuming that there's nothing you can do, like you just kind of gotta put yourself back together and hope that the neighborhood survives. Yeah. And I feel like a lot can be said about that with like police brutality now.
Yeah, it's extremely forward thinking. Like it is an extremely progressive movie for 1989.
Like, I think the biggest thing you could say about the film is, okay, there was a scene where they're talking about their dreams, the three gentlemen on the sidewalk in front of the red wall. They're talking about opening story and following or creating their dreams. The Asian couple who had opened that store across the street, and they had said before that there was never a business there successful throughout the years, and then they started it and then had been successful, more than successful. So the idea was that conversations were had about, basically what I'm getting at is that the topics in those movies were not talked about in film, I don't think, especially in a conversation where it was very subtle, especially in a way, you know what I'm saying, without being forced.
Yeah.
Also, especially, we're going to dive into the ending, I'm sure, now, right?
Yeah. Just feel free to bring it all up whenever.
The whole scene is like the whole pivot throughout the film, I guess, is when Spike Lee throws the trash can and then they go to demolish the pizzeria. Mm-hmm. And there's never been a film at the end. I guess because most people were unsettled with the film because there was not really a resolution they felt like, I guess, after watching the film. It's like, okay, they didn't really get justice. They just demolished the whole place. And I guess that's why it was controversial at the time. But I think personally, and I may be perceiving this in a terrible way, but I think Spike Lee's character, Mookie, you know, had enough. He's like, a man's life was taken, you know, over a beef, regardless of who started it. And so he expressed his way of just throwing a trash can through the window and then starting that riot of sorts. And so that was heavy, you know, to see that. And I was like, oh my God, you know, just seeing all these people just shred it. And then the ending, we're seeing smiling. So when he placed that photo on the wall, I think, God, that was such a touching moment. It's like the whole, you know, it was started out if it's like his way, like, oh, we need black people on the wall. We need black people on the wall. I was like, okay. It just started off like a simple dialogue between, so I suck at names.
Bugging out and Sal.
Thank you. Yeah. It started off as a simple conversation. It's like, when you get your own restaurant, you can put your own pictures on the wall, whatever. And then eventually it became the climax of the film, as far as like him feeling that way about the boombox. But when he placed that image or when placed that photo on the wall at the ending after it all had been demolished, I thought it was so poetic. You know what I'm saying? Because he didn't know what he was doing, but he just thought, you know, or maybe he did, I guess. Smiley.
I think he did. Yeah. I think he did.
The poeticness of it all, you know, yeah. of Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. And God, I don't know. This is a little personal note here. I enjoyed the way he drew on the photo. I think it made it so much more unique than just having a photograph. I don't know why they paid attention to that, but it felt more personal when, you know, because he kept on drawing Malcolm X. He's like, X, Malcolm X, you know. And then at the end, he had the markers around the two figures, kind of, I guess, highlighting the two. I don't know if that was a conscious thought with the actual photograph, but I enjoyed that. So basically, yeah. to summarize it all, what I'm saying is like there was a lot of simple dialogue, but they had so much higher meaning, especially with like the three gentlemen and then the Asian couple or family who started a business. And then, of course, the dialogue with the boom box is like, turn it off. Now this is my business, blah, blah. There were small conversations which eventually turned into something so much bigger. It's just a lot. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but apparently the situation at the ending of the film was a real life event, but not to the exact same story. So a gentleman was killed by a police officer due to altercation like that, similar to that. And that's what's inspired Spike Lee or whoever wrote it. I think Spike Lee wrote it. Write the film. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that was one of my big questions for like the end of the pod was like, you know, did Mookie do the right thing?
I was just about to ask it. I hate it.
Through the glass and like inciting the riot. So Cody, you think he did?
To not beat around the bush, I don't think the question is to ask if he did the right thing in that particular instance. I think the question is why he threw the trash can, because you know the whole neighborhood was about to have a fight. I don't know. So the idea is that you demolish a man's property because a man died. And even if it was indirect or not, you know, that's the question you have to ask yourself. That I don't know if this may sound stupid, but it's hard for me as a white man to say either way, right? Because if not, I feel like either way there was injustice that happened. A man died for something of a small, you know, bigger that turned into something way bigger. But to sum it up, I think Mookie did the right thing in the film because, like I said, he was on the edge the whole time between Sal and his sons and then the whole neighborhood. I think that was his way of saying, hey, this is it.
Okay.
Did Mookie do the right thing? I would say that... To go along with Cody's thought, I really feel like Mookie was in between the whole movie. Like, he's in between working for this business that he's worked for however long. Like, even there's like the one scene where Sal's talking about naming it Sal and Sons Pizzeria. And he's like, Mookie, you always have a place here because you're like a son to me. And I feel like that scene was so, like, I feel like it was supposed to be a powerful scene because right after that, is when everything like rises to a fever pitch, and then like the riots start breaking out and everything.
Mm. Right when you think, yeah, everything's great.
I don't know. Like, I ultimately feel like it was kind of a movie where you almost felt like you had to pick a side. Like, everybody who lives in Bed-Stuy, of course, they're gonna side with they're gonna side with their friends, their family that all live in this area of Bed-Stuy because Radio Raheem was killed due to a negligent police officer. And I mean, ultimately, I feel like Sal probably has to agree. Well, probably not agree. Obviously, he's going to err on the side of, well, they ruined my restaurant. and the insurance is going to eventually pay for it. And I feel like that kind of lumps him in with like the group of the majority, like the majority of white people. Like I feel like it would group him in with that. So I feel like it was kind of a situation where I feel like each person had to do what they felt was necessary. And I felt like Mookie throwing the garbage can through the window, I feel like it was him deciding that if this is going to work out, we're both going to have to like we're all going to have to work together in order to make Bed-Stuy safer for all of us. Because there's like right after that, see Martin Lawrence's character, he is like running around. He's like they killed him. He's like, we're getting killed in our own neighborhood. We're not even safe here. And I feel like that was a really like interesting note to point out. So I would say he did the right thing.
And to make a point, what you said then, I felt uncomfortable after that happened. I was like, wow, they just destroyed, you know, regardless how you felt, they destroyed this man's business without having a conversation. But then after that scene, when it was him and Sal, when he went to get paid, it was like, he was mad. Like, Sal's like, just your fault, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, you want money here? And he's like, starts throwing $100 bills at him. And then like, Mookie was like, no, you only owe me $250, not $500. And it was like, so are you crazy? And so that, or I would say the climax happens so quickly, and then the resolution happens directly after, of course, usually. But that's like, so that conversation is what I think proves to me that Mookie did the right thing, because he's like, he wasn't for hate. He didn't destroy the restaurant out of hate. It was just like, hey, he felt that was fair. And then Mookie never wanted more than just to be fair, I guess. What about you, Drew? What do you think?
I disagree that he didn't do it out of hate. Because he yells out hate before he throws the trash can into the wall. I think he was really pissed off about Radio Raheem unjustly getting choked out by the police officer. And it was totally like an act of... I don't know about revenge. Yeah, he acted out of anger. And like after the movie was over, I felt like morally gray. I was like, that was a very heavy watch and I don't really... Like, I enjoyed it, but, like, it left me a lot to think about. And I read an interview with Spike Lee where some people thought, well, okay, I say some people, white people thought that Mookie threw the trash can to distract the rioters and, like, the other people from Bed-Stuy to kind of distract them from hurting Sal. Because, you know, they were all kind of closing in on the mayor and Sal and Pino and Vito. They're all, like, kind of... getting closed in on, and Mookie comes out of nowhere and just yells out hate and throws the trash can, and they all just like storm the building and they get out of there. And Spike Lee said, yeah, only white people have ever asked me that. Like, was that out of defense of Sal? He said, like, black people, they absolutely think that like Mookie was in the right there. And I just thought that was like an interesting discussion. I did not even think of that. I kind of forgot Sal was there because, like, you don't really see him after that frame. It's kind of just focused on them tearing up the building.
I told and you then, there were some people out there that were Sal sympathizers. I told you.
They're out there, man. They're out there.
Like how they're carried to the other side of the block, you know, for their own protection, I guess. You know, that's a good point. I never thought about it like that. Yeah. It's almost like it's like either they're going to hurt him or the business, you know, so... Instead of hurting an actual human being, they destroyed a inanimate object, you know, a business, something that represented their hatred, I guess.
Yeah, Spike Lee, like, clarified, you know, he did it out of anger, like, for Radio Raheem. You know, the place does get destroyed, and, you know, y'all talked about, like, the meeting the next morning, and Sal, like, throws the money at him, and that whole exchange, and also, I don't know if this is... canon in the Spike Lee universe or whatever thing he's got going on, but apparently Spike Lee made a movie in 2012 called Red Hook Summer. Have y'all heard of this?
No.
Okay, it was a pretty like under the radar movie, but Spike Lee actually like reprised his role as Mookie for like a 2-minute cameo, and he said he's like still delivering pizzas for Sal, and like him and Sal are still friends, and like that he opened up a place in Red Hook, New York. And like, wow, it was because like so he cool. put up pictures of like black folks on the wall. Like, I don't quite know how I feel about that. That feels like revisionist history. I feel like the morally gray
like outlook of the film without Red Hook is better. just because you don't really know what happens. I don't really like having a set in stone, like, canon definition of, like, oh, everything's fine, you know, they're still buds, like, because, you know, it's clearly, like, a pivotal point in both of their relationships. It's just, like, that's, for sure, that's the turning point. I definitely side with Mookie, like, you guys. I feel like he did the right thing. He did, like, the important thing. You know, if my friend was killed, I'd probably be pretty pissed off too and do something stupid. And, you know, maybe not inside a riot or anything, but like, I feel like my emotions would definitely get the best of me. And, and you know, like Mookie says the next day, like, Sal is definitely, nothing's going to happen to Sal. Sal's fine. Sal's going to have insurance, money. He's covered. He's okay. I know he goes on his little tangent about, like, he built the place from the ground up. And he has, like, an emotional attachment to it. One of Mookie's, like, best friends died. Like, that's a big thing. It starts off as such, like, a carefree, like, fun movie. And then it just devolves into something, like, angry and full of... I don't know. It just left me feeling so weird after I finished it. I just, like, had to read more and investigate more about the film, like, after I was done with it. But... I loved it. Like, honestly, if that was my introduction to Spike Lee, I would have gone headfirst into his filmography. Because, like,
for sure,
this was fantastic.
White Man Can't Jump.
That's not a Spike Lee movie, man.
Is it not?
No.
I feel like it's.
What are you housing?
No. I actually watched that. I watched it with my girlfriend a couple months ago, and it's pretty lame. It's not that great.
No, never mind.
Rosie Perez, I think she's in it. Tina from Do the Right Thing. Yeah, it's lame, though. I wouldn't check it out.
I think that's why I thought about it, because I looked on Wikipedia, and I saw that Tina was in both of them. I was like, oh, so that must be... Whoops, didn't mean to slip that. All right. No,
it's all good. But
go ahead, Cody.
No, sorry. That just reminded me, though, I never mentioned anything about my favorite part of the editing. I know we mentioned that earlier. But,
oh, yeah. What's up?
My favorite part, as far as how they edit it, is when the narration off screen, it's when Mookie goes to visit his baby mother. and then... He pulls the whole eye scene, and of course, the people remember that scene because it's so sexual. But I will mention my favorite part is when he's narrating. It's like, "Thank God for the thighs," you know. And I just love how it cuts it, you know, not just the bosom or the boob, or whatever. It's
the bosom.
I was trying to be proper. The boob.
The bosom.
You know what I mean.
Go, continue.
No, but it was like, it was just like how he sectioned, you know, the narrative voiceover over every shot. That was my favorite scene as far as editing goes.
Yeah,
I bet it was your favorite scene.
So, final verdict, 1 out of 5 stars. What did y'all think? We'll start with whoever wants to go. The floor is open.
But before we wrap it up, I shouldn't we talk about the things we didn't like?
Oh God, yeah,
issues.
I didn't have a lot of them, but yeah, let's get into that. That's a good point. Who wants to start? Malachi?
Apparently, Cody. That man was the one that brought it up.
I'm gonna have to think about that one.
Cody, you brought up the criticism.
No, I'm just saying to give a fair review, you need to talk about the pros and the cons. Here are the cons.
Okay.
If there's not any, just say nothing and just go on with your life, you know?
Okay. All right. I'll go ahead and go here. The only part I really didn't like was some of the dialogue, I guess, from, like, what was Martin Lawrence's character's name and his crew?
I'm pretty sure. It was, like, C, Punchy, Ahmad, and that girl's name. I can't remember.
Okay. Their crew kind of, like, got on my nerves. I don't have any specific examples of, like, snippets of the dialogue, but they're in the movie for, like, 10 or 15 minutes. Like, it's not a big deal. They're not, like, the main focus of the movie. But
when they bust in there, like, hey, we want pizza, and now it's closing time, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, anytime they were on screen, I was just like, oh, okay, they're here, whatever.
Okay,
like,
so
it,
not...
it wasn't badly written. It was just kind of... And I know that they were written to be, like, annoying characters. It just... It still doesn't make it, like, just an enjoyable porn. Why did I say enjoyable porn? Enjoyable performance on screen. So, yeah, it's just a small nitpick. Like, I adored the movie. Like, it was fantastic, but... Yeah, that's all I've got. Honestly, okay. I thought it was incredible. But what do y'all think?
I'll go next, I guess. You just remind me. One thing I thought, see, the things of the cinematography or just the way the camera worked, was worked so well in places, and then sometimes it didn't. So I don't know the particular scene. When it was Mookie and another, I forget who it was. Anyways, it was. I'm sorry, it's the conversation when Mookie's making a run and he runs into Radio Raheem, and then it's showing like the camera, like Radio Raheem talking to Mookie, and then like it's an awkward pan from, like, I know what they were trying to do as far as like show it from his perspective, but it didn't work for me. It felt forced. And there were so many scenes with, it was a conversation when, like I said, when Mookie was made to run. And there's so many scenes in the movie where the cinematography is so great. And then there was that scene. I was like, gosh, like, I see what they were trying to do. But the camera work was so shaky. And which in the film, there's a lot of shaky scenes. Like even with the extreme close-ups they have, which it works fine. I love those. But it was that whole perspective thing where like the camera guy comes around Reddy Rahim and it makes it look like he's talking from his perspective. That's the only thing I found cringy about it. Okay. I'll have to send you guys the link later to that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious. I don't remember that part. And if I did, it was probably like
right. And so it was so. Numb. It was numb to most, I guess, viewers. And for me, it was just. But other than that, as far as storytelling, no, there was nothing wrong. There was no scene where it lacked any kind of, I guess, progression.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It all flowed just for sure. So smoothly.
For sure. So other than that, there was just that one scene that kind of bothered me. But like, that's the biggest thing like you have with the characters. Then I've seen that as a good film. What about you, Malachi? Have you thought anything since we've talked?
Upon watching the movie, I didn't really like see anything that was like glaring that I was like, ugh, that made the movie rough. Or there was anything that was like, could have been better. Like, I didn't really have like a whole lot of like points in the movie where I wasn't pleased with what was happening. Like, the only part that I thought was a little bit strange was that Buggin' Out's character, he's, like, walking around asking people to boycott Sal's Pizza. Like, nobody's, like, going for it. And then Radio Raheem, with his one interaction that you see, because he told him to turn down his radio, which, I mean, makes
it's
sense.
It's like, the same song.
Like, I get it. Like, I understand. Like, if somebody was playing music that long or that loud, and there's like a whole scene in the movie where he shows just how loud it's playing whenever he's like interacting with the group of like Hispanic people, Puerto Ricans, wherever they're from.
I'm not sure.
I don't know for sure off the top of my head.
I'm not going to erase the profile.
But, They're turning up their boombox to try to go against Radio Raheem's, and he turns his loud even more, and you still hear his over everything else. Same song.
Fight
same
the power. Fight, exactly. fight the power.
And I just feel like, I don't know, like, whenever Buggin' Out and Radio Raheem run into the pizzeria, I was like, oh, it's not going to be, like, that big of a deal. Like, maybe they'll just get him to leave, or... maybe he'll just agree to put pictures on the wall. But no, like, in that instance, the entire movie just, like, flips on its head. Like, Sal is, like, everybody that said they weren't going to boycott him, they're like, oh, no, Sal's been here, like, for 25 years. Like he loves, like, our people. And then he says the N-word in, like, that one scene, and it just flips everything so quickly.
Yeah.
So quickly. And... I mean, I guess that's kind of like how people are. Like, they can be really fickle. They can flip, like, whenever tensions are rising and, like, you feel like you're get, like, whenever you have sensory overload, I feel like you might say something you may not mean. Because, I mean, he seemed, like, pretty upset about it, like, at the end. Like, he was just like, he's like, I've been here for a long time. Like, he seemed pretty apologetic about it.
Yeah. For sure. Even when the son, with the conversation with the son, he was like, we got to get out of here. My friends make fun of me because, you know, I work here, you know, bedside. And then he was like, no, this is like, yeah, this is where we're going to stay because this is where we work. You know, there's so many other pizzerias around. And so, I mean, and you could tell, like, even like you said earlier about what Sal said about Mookie, like, you're my son to me. Like, you could tell that he didn't have any hate in his heart towards black people in general. It's just like you said, it just rose to that
climax. Like, cracked. Yeah.
He just cracked, and then he just, all that hatred, and he used his words. But, and then they just flipped out.
It's such like a dour end. Like, and then it's that, you know, they're meeting the next day, and then the movie ends with like the duality of like the Martin Luther King quote and then the Malcolm X quote. Like, it's
right, just, and they contradicted each other kind
of. Yeah. That was such like it was like the perfect bit to like end the movie on. Mm-hmm. Like, just in a movie filled with like hard decisions. I thought that was excellent. Like,
they were perfectly placed, because even though they both stood up for civil rights, they still fought for civil rights in a different way, as far as like their passion. Martin Luther was more of a peaceful kind of, let's, you know, and then Malcolm was like, okay, let's do what it takes to get where we need to go, you know, so, yeah. But both fighting for the same cause here.
Yeah.
So I think those quotes were very well placed in the ending of the film.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved it. Great, great, great pick, Cody. Like, I'm so glad that I finally watched this movie. It's been on my list for so long, and I'm so glad we got to talk about it, because I thought that was excellent. So good. So, we have reached the part in the podcast where we're going to figure out what we're talking about next time. Oof indeed. I don't have anything picked out yet.
Last time I just grabbed my 1001 movies to watch before I die book and flipped through it, and guess what I landed on?
Yeah, so I'm about to just flip through like my Letterboxd watch list and go from there. Like, I'm about to just pick up something random.
Malachi, do you have your die?
I'm getting it right now. There was a movie that I was really considering watching the other day that I thought about maybe saving it for the podcast. Let me see if I can find it.
Okay. Cody, you have anything in mind?
I am currently looking, sir.
Okay. For me, I've been thinking about, ever since I watched Parasite, I've been wanting to get more into Bong Joon-ho's filmography. And I know he's a pretty, like, not up-and-coming director, but, like, he's reached a point where he's not necessarily, like, a household name with, you know, Oscar season and full swing, and people are, like, rallying for Parasite. I've really wanted to get more into his filmography. I've seen Okja. I've seen Snowpiercer. I'm curious to see what else he's made. So I think for my pick, I'm going to do The Host, which is it's like a monster movie social commentary thing he directed back in 2006. I'm not sure quite what it's about, but I've always been interested in seeing it. It's got like rave reviews, and the dad from Parasite is in it, who I adore. I want to see like everything he's in, because he's awesome. He's in it, and I have faith in Bong Joon-ho. I think that's my pick. I'm going to do The Host.
Okay. Malachi, yeah. You have something?
I'm gonna say we watch Heat.
Oh, yes! By
Michael Mann.
Yes.
It's on Netflix, so I feel like that would be really easy for all of us to watch. And I've started it, and I've gotten like 20 minutes into it each time I've started it. And I just really need to sit down and watch it, because I hear so many good things about it.
I bought a VHS copy of Heat from Goodwill like 2 weeks ago, and it came on like two VHSs, because that movie is like 3 hours long.
You're right. It's 170 minutes.
I've seen it.
I didn't know it was on Netflix.
I'm pretty sure, because like I was gonna watch it. Like, as far as I know, the last time I went to go look at it, it was still there.
Well, if it's not, I am going to get the HD version.
I'm worried, don't be a tightwad.
For real, I can spare an extra dollar to watch like a movie in decent quality, watching JPEGs move around. Anyway, Cody, what do you got? What's your pick?
I'm going through my IMDb.
Okay.
All right, let me just go with Bullet with Steve McQueen. I've never seen it. I've always wanted to see it on DVD. I went to I wanted to take the packaging out and pop that bad boy in and potentially watch it if it's picked. But if not, okay. Then the ones you mentioned sound also good as well. So,
did you say it's called Bullet?
Yeah, Bullet, Matt. It's the you've probably seen the most iconic scene. It's wearing San Francisco heels in the black muscle car where he like jumps over. Like it's a in slow motion with the car jumps the hills of San Francisco. But it's an action film with Steve McQueen.
Okay. I haven't seen anything that Steve McQueen's been in. I'm excited, yeah. I'm on board.
Sounds good.
Malachi, you got it ready?
I do. We're doing all right. We're gonna mix it up. We'll do 1, 2, Drew's movie, 3, 4, mine, and no wait, Cody, yours was 5 and 6 last time.
Yeah, it was 5 and 6 last time.
We'll do
1 and 2 Cody, 3 and 4 mine, 5 and 6 Malachi.
Alright, let's see all here. Right. 5.
All right, Malachi.
So we're watching Heat.
We're watching Heat.
You sound nice. So excited.
Yes, dude. I'm ready. I love Al Pacino, man. He is my boy. He is like such a hokey actor, but like,
you're right. I love it, man. It's my union.
Have y'all seen Jack and Jill? He's crazy.
No.
Dunkachino? Y'all don't have to watch the whole movie, but just look up the Dunkachino scene and you have like 2 minutes to spare. But yeah, I guess we'll be back in 2 weeks talking about Michael Mann's Heat. 3-hour crime epic.
Speaking of, I hear sirens outside my window.
Jesus. Sitting.
All right, well, I'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
All right, boys. Good talk. See y'all in 2 weeks.
Thank y'all for listening.
Of course. Thank you.
Yeah. CMD signing off. I love Larry the Cable Guy. I think he's so funny. I love the blue collar comedy.
That's too funny.
Yes, we're recording.
Okay. Yeah, we have that on evidence. We have evidence that you just admitted that you love the blue comedy.
I do. I love Jeff
Blue collar comedy tour.
You might be a redneck if you watch Do the Right Thing.
That is not a redneck. That's opposite of redneck.
You might be a white man if you sympathize with Sal. All my friends are.
I'm gonna edit all that out.
Please use.
I don't think we should get into Sal sympathizing before we even start talking about the movie.